Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good day, good evening, depending on where you are on the planet. Welcome to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen broadcast. We have been experiencing some technical difficulty, which can be expected. So we're going to start out with a song from our dear friend, Pato. And Pato, we're going to say that it is a new day dawning. This is a brief bumper, and we'll come back on the air.
And I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, it is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. New day, angels calling. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be.
Welcome back to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen broadcast, and our guest, Rabbi Yossi, is not here yet, and actually I have an original song that was written, and I heard this gentleman play it in Dallas, and I do have permission to play this, and here it is, Rejoice by Kaplan, and this will take... We'll play this a few minutes, and I'll get in touch with the rabbi. There you go, folks, and we welcome you again to the Blog Talk Radio. We're waiting on the good rabbi to call in, Rabbi Yossi, and we may be having some technical difficulty. Here he is. Here he is now. Rabbi, you with us? Hello? Hello? You're on the air. Yes, well, this is the way it goes. Maybe this person is just listening. and I'll put them on mute. Whoever you are, please call back if you want to say something. Meanwhile, it looks like I will play another song. I was calling Rabbi Yossi. Again, folks, we're having, I don't know if you've noticed, on your cell phones, it's like the, here he is. I'm going to play another song, and we're going to call Waiting Loving Service him.
I hear some say nothing is sweeter than love's first kiss, or getting high till you reach the sky on a cloud of bliss. But as I reflect upon my life and I reminisce, I can't dismiss that I get a thrill from love and service. That is why I'm gonna learn to love, and I'm gonna love to serve. 'Cause as I serve my brothers and sisters, I am serving the Father. Yes, I'm gonna learn.
Welcome back, folks, to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen Broadcast. This is Ann Garner, your host on Wednesday, and I believe we have Rabbi with us. Rabbi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
You know, it's a very lively and fun thing to do, live broadcasting. Yeah, and
definitely is.
You just have to roll with it. And so, sir, we do appreciate you coming on the air with us. I said in the blurb that I discovered you on Facebook, and I love Facebook, and I began to read your incredible sage writings and was quite amazed at your insights, and I just really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Would you share with our listening audience your background? I know you were born in Australia, is that right? And you're an Orthodox rabbi.
Melbourne, Australia. Mm-hmm. I come from a Hasidic Orthodox background, going back into Russia and Europe. And I guess as a child I was taught English, Hebrew, Yiddish, and Aramaic simultaneously.
How many languages do you know?
Well, basically, I was taught four basic languages. I know bits and pieces of other languages, but those are the basic languages.
So what brought you to this country, to America?
Only God knows.
Only God knows.
I can give you the excuses and reasons, but I married someone from Brooklyn, so that's how I ended up here eventually, I guess.
Now, what year was that?
In 83, I got married, but I went back to Australia. I was in business for a number of years, and in 89, came back to the States.
So now you were conducting, I don't know the adjective. I'm going to use this word, you were a normal rabbi.
A normal rabbi? I don't know if I'm normal.
You had some kind of an awakening. I do know that.
Well, I had an awakening when I was born here. I couldn't understand this world. That was my first awakening to a different space than where I came from. And then growing up, I knew I was very different. I came from my family is very spiritual and very religious, and so I was taught how to connect with beyond the definitions of religion and of the structures that people thought of, to use the structures that we have and to connect with the infinite energy and being that's behind it. And so I grew up doing that and learning, and my grandfather taught me how to analyze Hebrew, Biblical Hebrew and Talmud, how to understand the root of the words.
Rather than just reading for shallow and being told what someone else thought, you really were taught.
That's correct. And at the same time, I was taught that you have to be practical and real, because the Creator put us here to be in the physical with everything and connect to Him through what we have. And so I was taught to see the Creator in everything. So it gave me a little different perspective, and it gave me an appreciation, an understanding, a way to be responsible for myself and for how I relate to everything around me. And I guess when I was 28, I went to New York. I studied this for 3 years in Chabad Lubavitch Rabbinical Seminary that was continuing what I had done in Melbourne. And in 83, I got my rabbinic ordination and got married. And then I went into business. I didn't intend to use it as a rabbi. I just studied as a Jew to know what a Jew is. But when I left the business and came to the United States,
you left the business. Okay. Yeah. Well, it is a business. Yes, it's a spiritual business.
Yeah. I became a rabbi here, assumed responsibilities, but then decided after a while that being a rabbi of a congregation doesn't work, because people expect you to be a certain way and they want you to be a certain way, and It just, I wasn't interested in being the way people want me to be. I wanted to be the way God wanted me to be, and that's always changing. And so I didn't want to sit myself, be stuck in a specific framework. And so I used the framework I have, which God gave me, to as a base to expand from. And so I'm a rabbi, a roving rabbi, and I teach Jews, Christians, and people from different religions and not religious people, help them to connect within themselves to their own connection with the Creator.
Hmm. Well, now, did you see a difference? I know Australia is a very different atmosphere. I have not been there, but I know the Parliament of World Religions was held there in
mm-hmm.
December. And by chance, were you there for that?
No, I wasn't there.
Well, you know, we're seeking to bring it to Dallas-Fort Worth area, to North Texas, back to the United States in 2014. And so we really need your sage advice and input regarding this monumental undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I'm honored to be chair of the partnership committee. So
mm-hmm.
just bringing it back here, I was a part of it in 93.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it was the first one in 100 years that was held in Chicago. So it's quite a remarkable event, Rabbi. And getting
mm-hmm.
back to Australia, my friends who were did attend, I had many friends that went. I could not make it
mm-hmm.
for a lot of different reasons. They said the atmosphere, the way people functioned there was somewhat different than in the United
yes.
States.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So was there somewhat of a cultural, religious, sociological shock when you arrived?
Well, the people in Australia are very laid back. People work, and then they just like to talk about sports and relax. And so the lifestyle when I came to New York especially was very different. But it didn't matter too much. I was on my own journey, and so I just went on my own journey. And I find the same thing. People sometimes say to me, where do you live? And I tell them, in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I find people, God is everywhere. The Creator is everywhere. And so I don't have to go looking to see where is God seeking, because the Creator is everywhere. Wherever I am, that's where the Creator is. And so I feel comfortable wherever it is. And in different places, people are different, and that's people. So I don't usually have a culture shock or concern, because everyone has their own connection, and that's their business, not mine. So I just go around holding my connection.
Holding my connection. Though that right there is a pretty profound statement. Holding
mm-hmm.
my connection. And I know we talked about what are we going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And you remind me of my wonderful guest last week, Jinko, the great Buddhist Zen monk. He's still a monk.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to, how should we say, rehearse it. Some people want to give me questions, which is fine. There are people,
mm-hmm.
a couple of people who actually kind of scripted it because they've never done broadcasting.
Okay.
But within minutes, they became very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But holding your connection, you said three questions to bring up on this broadcast. And
mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty profound. Just, you know, what's it all about? That's the bottom line. Because a
mm-hmm.
lot of people don't know what it's all about.
Right.
So what would you say to people? In the most, well, you really are simply complex. You're
yeah.
simply complex in your writings. I will
mm-hmm.
say that. And
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, my gosh. I knew when I started reading you, there was this, once again, it was this recognition within minutes. Oh, my goodness. And somehow I knew that your voice would not be some of my friends who live in the upper part where you do. Your accent,
mm.
I just knew it was going to be a little bit different, although you don't sound Australian.
I don't have any particular accent, only on some words you may detect nuances. But I wasn't a big talker growing up, so I didn't develop too much of an accent.
That's interesting. So you just stayed very quiet.
Mm-hmm. I was an observer, listener, and I listened to everything and everyone and thought with my mind, analyzed everything, all in a quiet space.
Well, quiet spaces are good.
Mm-hmm.
And listening is so important. I know how many people don't really listen. They're waiting to get their next thought in. Therefore, they're not listening.
Mm-hmm.
And so how would you define that unique space that you've been in? Can it be and still live in that connection? Is it possible for everybody?
I believe it is, and I think it is. I'm a human being, and if I can be in that space, I just assume everyone else can be, because everyone is part of the Creator just as much as I am, and it's just a matter of how much you're aware of it. And when you're aware of it, then I don't see any reason why you can't be what you're aware of.
Well, now, everybody, what they're aware of, we're going to talk about this again Saturday, because I'll be co-hosting that show because Paula and Crystal are not available.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday we're going to be talking about getting out of the muck and mire, getting, you know, the quagmire. I have something I wrote on a study guide several years, well, 2002, which still holds true, of how you, the air, A-I-R, I like to use letters, how you act, interact, and react, the air of your life. Why do you think people continue to function, to act, interact, and especially react out of the quagmire of the animal lower nature and not allowing themselves to move on? What blocks people?
Well, I'm not going to call it an animal or lower nature.
Okay, that's interesting. What term would you give it?
I am simply going to say that the source of all existence, the that created everything, has no definition, no beginning, no end, and therefore everything that exists is all possibilities. And whatever a person is exactly what the Creator wants them to be at this moment in time.
Mm.
That doesn't mean the next moment they can't change. Every moment is a new creation. Everything is shifting constantly. We don't see it necessarily with our senses immediately, but everything is shifting and moving. It's a new creation every moment.
Mm.
And every moment is where we're supposed to be. We're not here to judge it, to say it's better or worse. It's exactly where we're supposed to be. But we have the ability and responsibility to make the next moment a better moment, a new creation and a better creation than we have now. And that is the gift that God gave us, a gift of choice, a gift of abilities, and we can use it whichever way we use it. And since the world has balances, there's balance of positive and negative. Some use it one way, some the other way, and that all attributes to the balance. And if we're responsible, we transform it, we make it into light, or we transform it into one of growth and stability for ourselves and others.
When someone comes to you, Rabbi, for counseling, I know many people come to you. They're drawn to you in that way.
Right.
Have you found a pattern of if someone has been reared, raised up, And I do appreciate you not saying the lower nature. I so appreciate that. Although in some circles that's what it's referred to, the different ways of functioning, lower,
right,
medium, higher. So, you know, but that's a contrast. Just
right.
mean for that to be a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is raised in an abusive situation, let's start out with emotional.
Okay.
Then we'll
mm-hmm.
then let's move it. I'm going to write this down. Emotional. And emotional meaning social with the family,
right,
with the religion, because a lot of times people get emotionally thwarted
sure.
with their religion. And then we'll move to physical abuse.
Right.
Do they have a tendency to repeat that pattern in their lives? And if so, how do they overcome it?
Yes, when a person is hurt, irrespective of what the reason is, if a person is extremely sensitive, they become hurt. It doesn't have to be actual abuse. There's all different types of abuse, and there's all different types of pain. When a person has pain, in order to compensate for it, they do something else, or the body reacts in different ways. And very often, in order to survive, they have to block part of their own sensitivities that they have. And so they start becoming a person who they're not. So when a person comes, I don't have an attitude or a way to think or analyze or do anything. I just listen with an open heart. I accept them exactly the way they are. Because to me, they have a pure heart. They have a pure connection with the Creator. And that's what I see and look at. And as they tell their story, it comes to my heart. And whatever they need to hear comes back from my heart to them.
Mm-hmm.
I just open myself to flow with whatever the Creator wants.
Well,
you're really
moving in a very non-judgmental way. Because when you judge, that takes a lot of energy, wouldn't you say?
Well, when you judge, you stop seeing everything for what it is. You narrow yourself in. And if you want to help a person, you have to respect who they are, everything about them. You have to honor them, respect them, love them. You can't do that if you're judging. And judgment is really to create some type of balance and stability, stand everything. If you want to help the person be themselves, get beyond all the pains, you have to connect to their soul and essence. When you connect to it, then you can reflect that back to them, and they can start maybe shifting back to that space.
Have you ever heard of the what is termed in scientific terms the oscillating principle, that where the vibrations, if you walk into a room, the strongest energy will prevail?
I understand it.
Is there a term that you would use for that from the ancient, deep, sage understandings of Judaism?
I would just say that everything is vibrational, and everything has vibrational aspects to it. So when we enter a room or in a place, our vibration reacts or relates to the vibration in that space, whether we know it consciously or not. And so people can create vibrations that when people walk in, they will react to or feel.
So if someone has the polarity of some, okay, I'm going to have to use the polarity of positive,
okay,
negative, like an electrical outlet, and
mm-hmm.
then that none, nada. I've gone into situations where there's people there that it's like, they're not positive, they're not negative, they're just neutral. How would you define, if at all possible, your level of energy?
How I define my level of energy? It depends who I'm talking to and what I'm asking, but I would, for some people, I would say it's just from another dimension. Some people say it's very high frequency. It depends on the language of the person asking as to how I would attempt to explain it.
Well, let's get back to these people that, for whatever reason, they've been injured emotionally or physically, psychologically.
Right.
And they'll be set free. And, by the way, I do see a caller. I think that's Suzanne. She calls in and listens. She's our in-house poet. And Suzanne, I'll bring you in just a moment. Let us finish this thought. So many times, Rabbi, I almost called you pastor because I'm used to that in Christianity. So many times people will be okay? I'll spend time with them either on the phone or in person or now by email or texting or Facebook. I'll look at Facebook. But let's say it's in person. And I spend a lot of quality time with that person. And they really come into a new space of connection. Well, then circumstances are that we're not together for, say, 3 months or 6 months. And the next thing I know, and I just heard from someone, and this young person, I can sense it. I know the gifts of the Spirit are alive and well in those of us who function with that connection. That this person is in the quicksand once again. How does a person, in your opinion, affect a permanent modification so as they do not become so adrenaline-driven to partake of being drawn toward abuse? You know, there are people who actually enjoy it because they've gotten so used to it.
You cannot affect a permanent solution for another person. What we can do is we can support another person to become responsible for themselves. The only person that actually can make a permanent solution is the person themselves. What we are messengers. We're here to help the person attempt to do that if they want to. If the person doesn't choose to, yes.
Wow. So do you, let me ask you about what I term genetic memory. I know I have some genetic memory through the Whitehead. I'm a Whitehead, which is a strong bloodline, very clannish. And I will tell you, Rabbi, the Whiteheads are known for their hot tempers because they had to be very robust people. And it is obvious to me that you have overcome a lot of your genetic memory of being, because there's times that I have one bloodline sister, and I'd give anything that she would call and listen, but I know she's not, because I know she's in a space, and I love her dearly, but I finally got to the place I couldn't give a lot more energy after I'm 62 years old, and about 5 years ago, I just finally said, I love you dearly, but I cannot allow you to keep pulling on me if you're not willing. And she lives back home on one of the farms. And so I chose to be with in that space of relationship, close relationship, those people that carry forth an energy that's at the same level with me or even at a higher vibration. Now I am willing to draw back in with those who need counseling or just some, you know, counseling. Love, L-O-V-E. What would you say to someone if they're married or in a relationship or work, and that negative energy is all around them?
Well, again, I don't have a general rule of what I tell people. Each situation I listen to and look, and each person has their own lessons to learn and their own challenges. And everyone has that. And one has to understand why a person has the challenges, where they come from. Because when you take one challenge away, you often open up another challenge. So just fixing something doesn't mean you're doing the right thing. You have to listen to how it's there, why it's there. Maybe it needs to be there for some other reason. So one always has to listen. And when you listen, then you don't try to interfere. You just do what you need to, and things that are not yours to do, you don't do. We're not here to do everything. We're not here to live other people's lives. We're not here to do everything for everyone else. It's a full-time job living our own life. So we have to listen to see if this is what the universe, what the Creator wants us to do, or just be aware of. Because someone comes to us doesn't mean we have to do anything. Sometimes, not sometimes, maybe a lot of the time, every day, different people ask me different problems or questions, and very often I reflect, why is it on this day these type of problems or questions came to me? And very often, I'm able to find something in myself that I need to look at that's reflected through all the other people's problems and questions. So it could be God is giving you all these people, all these problems, not because they need it, but for you to reflect on it to find something in yourself that needs improvement.
Say that again, Rabbi. That was a very important thing you just said. What did you just say?
Maybe God is sending you someone with a problem or an issue, not because they need it, but for you to reflect on it, to find something in yourself that it reflects that you wouldn't normally think about.
Wow. I know I've noticed when people, and I have to watch this myself, and I catch it as best I can. If I get, all of a sudden it rises up, you know, and this anger. I see it with our children, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 33, 28, and 26-year-old. And we're very blessed. I've been married almost 35 years to just an incredible gentleman. And one of them came to me and finally admitted, she said, you know what's interesting? When I correct you, because, you know, you will be corrected if you have children.
Mm-hmm.
When I find fault with you, I begin to realize that it was something in me that I was working on.
Right.
And I said, wow, you just grew by leaps and bounds by saying that.
Yep.
And that neutral, being neutral space, it really pays off. It really pays off. Sometimes, do you think people that are always joyful, always laughing, the smile and everything, no matter what. Do sometimes these personalities hiding something within? Because there's times I'm melancholy. I woke up at 4:00 this morning, knowing that my husband was about to get on a flight. You know, he still has to travel at almost 70. He'll be 71 this month and travel around this country, around the planet. He's, you know. So there was a, I'm going to use the word depression. And if you had been with me, you would have seen my countenance of, wow, well, Anne's a little downcast now. And so what would you say to someone who's trying to hide it behind a constant smile and yay team and everything's glorious, like the hippie movement, you know?
Well, a lot of the humor that we have and goes around is based in people's pain and people's problems and issues. They reflect things. So it depends how you look at it also. I think going around with a smile and happy is the proper thing to do, because no one else has to know what's going on behind you. But a person does need to deal with their issues at some point in some way. And if they're just using it to bury it and not looking at themselves, then it's a problem. And it's the same thing with religion. Religion has many beautiful things, but if you're not a decent person, religion doesn't make you decent.
Say that again. If you're not a decent person, religion's not going to do it.
That's correct.
How many laws are in the, I call it the Old Testament? There's more than 10 commandments, right?
There's 613.
613 laws.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were a full-time Orthodox rabbi, were you under obligation to abide, how many laws did you abide by, or still, let's say, did?
Well, most of these laws are not applicable. Most of these laws apply to priesthood, apply to the temple, apply. There's only a small amount that actually applies to people. So
It's not applicable anymore.
Correct.
Well, now diet. You do eat certain foods, and you don't eat.
Absolutely, whatever I can apply to myself, I do apply. And because actually, one of the ways that we study the Old Testament is in the spiritual meanings of the words, and then everything becomes applicable.
What foods do you avoid, Rabbi?
What?
What foods do you not partake of?
Anything that the Bible says you're not allowed to eat, I don't eat.
Well, you know, I abide by that. You know, it's something that started happening within me in 1990.
Right.
And I feel much healthier. And I know shellfish. I haven't had shellfish in years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And help me with the... there's a reason that, like the shellfish, they partake of the debris, right?
Mm-hmm.
And help me with those laws about meat.
Okay, I'll help you. We're picking up a lot of subjects and not really going into them, but
right.
That's okay.
But this has to do with that transformation, because a
Absolutely.
Lot of people cannot get translated into a higher consciousness because they eat junk food, Rabbi.
Correct. Actually, food affects the way we think and the way we eat. So let me go back a minute, and then I'll come back to it. One of the things is that growing up as a child, I was taught by my religious family, and this is what it says in Ethics of the Fathers, Derech Eretz Kodmo Torah. A person has to be a decent person before, and that comes before religion. If you're decent, then the religion does what it has to. And if you're not decent, it doesn't help you. It just hides you.
Hmm.
Now, as far as the laws, the main thing of the whole Torah, of the Old Testament, is not how many laws you do or don't do. The word mitzvah, which I translate as commandment, actually means connection. It's about connecting with the Creator. You only need to do one thing every moment that connects you with the Creator. That's all. It's not about doing how many things. It's just about having an open heart and a constant flow with the Creator and listening. That's all it is.
Right.
Now, within that, there's a framework of what foods to eat and what foods not to eat. There's a reason that we were given foods to eat. And these foods have within them also a connection with the Creator that we don't have naturally on our own. We as human beings, we have thoughts, we have feelings, we change our minds all the time. Plants, animals, they are what they are. They don't change what they're created for. And so one of the things that we ingest and we connect to is the energy of those plants or animals, the energy that they have of connection with the Creator and creation. And the Hebrew words for in kosher, tohar, tomei, means that those foods that allow your heart and mind to stay open and connected with the Creator, or at least don't block it, they are okay to eat. Those foods that create a blockage in your mind or in your heart from connecting, those things we're not allowed to eat.
So if people want to know, there's a list available. I've seen it online.
Right.
Some people, to read the Bible, but it's very clear in the Bible what not to protect.
It's very clear. It says you can only eat fish with fins and scales. You can only have animals that chew the cud and have split hoofs. And so a lot of, pork or eel and shark and things like that are all not, the Bible says not to eat it.
Well, I've always sensed that there was guidance in that. Scientifically, it is being proven. Because if I accidentally partake of certain foods in a restaurant, and I have to be very careful, I keep asking, what is the base of this?
Right.
Within about 3 to 5 minutes, I can feel. Because as you know, I don't quite understand it, why so many restaurants continue to use pork fat, at the base. And instead of, there's other alternatives to that.
Well, people are not sensitive to energies. A person that is sensitive to energy, and people should be sensitive because that's what they are naturally, they've just blocked it out. But if a person allows himself, you can sense if the energy of the food is good for you, if it's not good for you, what the balance is. You can train yourself to do that.
Wow. That's wonderful. Well,
the same thing, I'm just going to jump and then you can go further. The same thing would be the biogenetic engineering of foods. When they manipulate the DNA of the seeds, they change the energy and it creates problems, and negative problems, in the people that eat the foods that come from such seeds.
Wow. You know how many people say that that's not true? But
people say it's not true because people only look at superficial things. They don't look. The shift that you create in the food, in the DNA, it doesn't suddenly make something bad. It takes a number of years. And most people can't look at something any more than about 5 seconds. They don't look at long term. And scientifically, it's been proved, they already have proof of negative effects of different things that have been engineered. And a lot of the allergies to foods are because of the genetic engineering. They have a lot of diseases and sicknesses. Just because there are people that have enough money to bury this information doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's there, and you can find it on the Internet.
Well, I know, and there are people that still believe and, live by the code, eat whatever's out in front of you, that does not affect your body or the way you think. And I know.
I have a very difficult time with people who can even think that. When you eat food, there are certain foods you feel heavy and you feel drowsy. Other foods you feel awake, which means the foods are affecting your body. If it's affecting your body, it's affecting the way you feel and the way you think. So for someone to say food doesn't affect the way they feel and think, I don't know what to say. It doesn't make sense.
Right. Well, it's a form of denial. I know people. Recently, we had some visitors that stayed in our home, and the daughter, who is a beautiful young girl, only about 8, 10 years old, she got up in the morning and sugar, instead of a healthy breakfast, just constant sugar and pudding and caffeine, I began to talk to her, I'm still waiting for her mom to call me because the daughter said, would you talk to my mom? And she actually asked for help. She said,
right.
I get these highs and then I get these lows.
Right.
And she said, but mom, and it's not, for whatever reason, not in their consciousness.
Yeah, people don't think because of big business, people don't realize that when you process food, you destroy it. Whether it's the milk, whether it's the fruits, the vegetables, they're meant to be drunk or eaten naturally. That's when it has all the vitamins and minerals. Once you process it, you destroy everything, and people don't seem to understand that, and their body doesn't get the nutrition, and they don't know why, and then they have all these imbalances because they're not getting the natural nutrition that God put in food.
Wow, wow, that's very powerful. We do have a caller, and I know she's at work, and she's given the signal that she would like to say something.
Okay.
It's a young lady that I've known for a while, and we were going to be talking about women. I watched your video this morning. Let's see if she's coming on the line. Okay, you're on the air, 214.
Hi, Rabbi. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
This is Yanina, and I wanted to call in and say thank you to the Rabbi for bringing up the food issues. It's a very important issue with all people. Of course, it's not just religiously speaking, and I completely agree with what you're saying, and that has been my experience as well. I have a quick question about the Old Testament and the issue of dietary restrictions. I have brought this question up with religious scholars and lay people and have gotten several different answers. So my question was that since in the Bible it does have some passages that state that some animals are prohibited from being consumed, one of the answers that I was given is that later on in the Bible there was a passage saying that God allowed everything to be consumed from the earth, and that passage canceled out the previous ones. What do you say about that?
I say that's garbage.
Okay.
That's clear and simple.
That's clear enough.
Someone made that up and decided that that's, they wanted to eat everything, so that's why they told you that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no such a thing.
That's the feeling I had. And so my follow-up question would be, of course, I don't know how Christian the three of us are, but, you know, basically, how do Christians reconcile not following the dietary restrictions in their own holy book, while Jews and Muslims, for the most part, do find that important?
Well, let's define what religions we're representing right here on this conversation. Rabbi, of course, is an Orthodox Jew. I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian minister. And you're a Muslim.
Yes, and the reason I said that is because I'm not sure if you are considered Christian or because of your Rancho book reading, which is, you know, also related to Christianity. I don't know if in the Rancho book there are the same guidelines as in other Christian denominations.
Well, first of all, I want to address what you said about the Bible, and I believe what they're talking about is from the writings of Paul.
Yes.
It was never addressed by Jesus, and you can tell if you look at in the Bible, especially in the Urantia book, Jesus was very careful. He was a Jew, and he did follow the law, and he was very careful with what he ate. And then Paul was also a bloodline Jew, and he did say something in the Bible, and I'd have to look it up. I'll turn around here while y'all are interacting. Something about when I'm with wherever I am, I partake of whatever they're partaking of, and I ask God to bless it. Now, that's where a lot of people get it. But you know our good friend, Brother Howard, who's a powerful Christian preacher, and I consider him a prophet, as you know, because he is a seer.
Mm-hmm.
He constantly talks about abiding by the laws of what to eat. He said those were guided. There's a reason the people were told that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Rabbi, would you like to address that in as far as what she just said?
Which part of what she said?
Wait, I didn't respond, though, about the Urantia book. The Urantia book just elaborates on the Bible. It doesn't, you know, and I am considered a Christian. And if people say I'm not a Christian, then they don't know what I believe or understand reality to be. One of the most powerful statements in the Urantia book is a warning, an admonition, to not pollute our body and our mind with poisons, with something. And I'm paraphrasing. But it does go ahead and talk about the most healthy people on the planet were those who abided by the healthy habits of a lot, focusing on fruits and vegetables and very clean meat. If you partake, of course, Jesus, I suppose, he only partook of fish, Rabbi. I don't recall him in the Urantia book. They don't mention,
right.
You know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and Rabbi's not familiar with the Urantia book, I suppose, Rabbi.
Have looked at the Urantia book. I looked at it several years ago.
Okay.
Jesus was a rabbi and a Jew, and he lived according to the Old Testament. He had nothing to do with the New Testament, and he lived according to what I know is in the Old Testament. So he ate in accordance with the food that God told him one should eat. Now, we as people are responsible for ourselves and our connection with the Creator. God is everywhere and with us all the time, but we are responsible for how we feel, connected or disconnected. And as a religious Jew, we know we're responsible. And one of the things that many people do is they shirk that responsibility. They throw it off. They give it to someone else. Whether they give it to the religion, they give it to God, they give it to a person, whoever, they don't take responsibility. And people that are not careful in how they eat means they're not responsible for looking after their own body and self. And which means they don't, in a certain way, they're saying, we don't care that God gave us our body, we're not going to look after it. If we realize God gave it to us, then we want to look after it. So I think a lot of it has to do with people's perspective of what they want of responsibility more than anything else.
And what would you say to some religions that are strictly vegetarian and even vegan, and in their traditions?
I think that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And I
grew up
in
Melbourne.
That it's killing the animal, and then we consume it. So therefore, it's not beneficial to our spirituality.
Maybe yes, maybe not. I grew up in Melbourne, Australia, and the fruits that we had were always ripened on the tree. The vegetables always ripened the ground, so it had all the nutrients and minerals and vitamins necessary, and we ate it fresh. And you ate it, you felt the energy. It was full of vitality. I came here to the United States, and everyone's eating this stuff that's big green. It has no, it is dead energy. I walk around the stores, the fruits and vegetables are dead energy. And I look, you know, people don't realize it. Just because it's fruits and vegetables doesn't mean it gives you life force. No wonder people don't have vitamins and minerals and have all these problems, because what they're eating is dead. And they're just not being responsible for their own life. They don't even understand it because they're not taught about it. They're not taught that God gave life and everything, and that's what you connect with. They're taught about the business world. They're taught about what society wants, and it has nothing to do with connecting. It all disconnects you from yourself. It's all about control. It's a whole different ballgame. So we were created to eat fruits and vegetables, to eat natural, and there's plenty of that, and to drink clean water. Now, it's after the story of Noah, the flood, God gave permission that if we need food to survive and we don't have fruits and vegetables, we can use the meat of animals just to sustain ourselves and what if we don't have food. So it's not that you can go eat it. It's if you need it only. Now, what people have done is taken that and they've abused that, and they just raise meat just to kill them, which is against nature and very destructive. It's also destructive because you have to destroy huge amounts of forests to create grass areas for animals, which is another destruction and causes a lot of other problems. So eating meat has a lot of different elements to it, in addition to the, what they feed it. If you're going to do it, it should be, it has to be organic, and it has to be, according to Judaism, slaughtered in a way that the animal feels no pain whatsoever. Stunning it, it still has pain, and it sends poisons throughout the body. So there are a lot of different things that people just have become desensitized to and haven't been taught about.
Well, we have some more callers, and Yanina, stay on the line because we do want to get to some other things. Let's see, we have 402 came in first. Let's take this caller. 402, you're on the air with Rabbi Yossi. Hello, 402.
Hello.
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 Who is this, please? I guess 402, they press 1, but I guess they don't want to talk, so I'll mute them. Okay, let me get them. 402, if you want to talk, you can hang up and call back. And when I see when I see the little hand press, that means you've hit 1. So we'll take the next caller. 714, you're on the air.
Good morning, sisters.
Oh, hello, Dave Tucker.
How are you?
Great.
Oh, hello, Rabbi and Yanina.
Hello.
It's a pleasure meeting you ladies.
Thanks.
I kind of wanted to bring up the course of discussion that we were talking about a little earlier in the show about anger and how that affects the youth and how you can see it happening a lot with people. And I wanted to bring up a point. And it's something that I believe anybody can, no matter what your faith or background is, anybody can agree with, and that's the fact of being of good cheer. You see so many people in throughout our history that have made a big difference in lives. It wasn't those who said do not this or do not that. It was those who led by example. And one of my favorite quotes, and I don't remember the person who said this quote, but one of my favorite quotes of all time says, "Minister the gospel always, and when necessary, use words." I love that. I love that so much. It rings
Dave,
so true in my heart.
Dave, we need to clarify within our understanding what the gospel is. And by the way, I'm going to bring in another caller real quick because she's probably on the road there in L.A., she is a dear friend of mine that's, let's see, Jamie. Let's see if this is Jamie. Jamie, are you there?
I'm here.
This is Jamie
Siegel.
Yes, Jamie, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Jamie, this is Rabbi.
Hello.
Hello, so nice to meet you.
Thank you.
What wonderful things you're saying. I was just listening in.
Well, Dave was asking a question about anger, and Jamie, we can all identify with that, right?
Oh, I think I have a real good handle on anger.
You're doing well, girlfriend. I love it. You're doing well. And Dave, would you please qualify what you mean by the word gospel? Because in Christianity, that has a different connotation.
Yeah, it does. And what I mean by gospel, the gospel to me isn't any one particular faith, isn't any one particular religion or book. I think the gospel to me is within what rings true and good to the individual person. In my personal opinion, religion is only that one personal relationship that you have with the higher being. I call him the Father, and everybody has different names, but I personally believe that the greatest thing we can do, the greatest legacy we can leave on this planet, is to be of good cheer. One of the greatest lessons we can teach our children is that when bad things happen, we don't have to react negatively. I think that's so wonderful to be able to take something bad that's happened to you and react positively, react as if you were reacting in front of the creator of all. And that's a lot easier said than done, but so many more bees are caught with honey than they are with vinegar. And what I mean by that is that we catch more people's attention by living good, by being an example, as opposed to condemning actions or lifestyles. And that's just my humble opinion. I don't mean to offend anybody. I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, you had a question.
Well, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, Jane.
I absolutely couldn't agree. I'm you know, a joyous beings are like magnets. They're like turned on light bulbs. And the brighter the light, so, like you said, the more it attracts. It's the law of attraction.
And you asked a rabbi a question, Dave. Would you frame that again about anger and the young people? And Jamie, you've been such an overcomer and a transformational person over the last 20 years that I've known you. Dave, did you understand Dave's question?
So, firstly, I fully agree. The way we teach and educate is by self-example, not by saying things.
Yeah.
And as far as anger, when a person has a feeling, the feeling is not good or bad. It depends what you do with the feeling. So when you have a feeling of anger, the moment the feeling comes up, you look how to transform it. We have the power and ability of transformation, and we can all do that. How do I channel that energy? Where do I channel it to? You can channel it in screaming. You can channel it into reading a book. You can channel it into going out in the garden and digging. When a person learns how to channel the feelings they have, then they learn to control themselves and become in charge of what they do, what they don't do, how they act, react. Then they become a human being.
Absolutely.
Become a human being. That's great.
Jamie, do you have a question or some input? Because I know your bloodline. What part of the world was your mom and dad? They were from?
Ukraine, Russian, you know, that whole area.
Говори по-русски.
Какой вы зовете?
Very good. Пусть хорошо.
But yes, I couldn't agree more. The transformation, that's what art is. Music and great art is artists who have channeled their own emotions into this transformative forum. And that's what the great art is.
Yep.
Well, and we do have another caller. Y'all stay on the line. Rabbi, you're getting a lot of calls today. That's wonderful. And everybody's doing really well. Let's see if this person, it looks like they're ready to talk.
Okay.
817, you're on the line. Hello, 817. Well, I guess 817, they're calling and pressing 1. Folks, if you call and you press 1 on your phone, that tells me you want to say something. So that's okay. Rabbi, you were going to talk about women's issues.
And,
you have 3 women on the phone now. Go for it. And we're all different ages. I'm 62. Janina, how old are you?
26.
You just had your birthday, and you're from Russia. Jamie, she's from Russia.
Wow, and my birthday's in 6 days.
Awesome.
Oh, wow, that is so cool.
I'm going to be 50 years old.
50, and tell them how old your daughters are, Jamie.
I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Isn't that great?
I waited
Beautiful.
A good long time.
Yep.
So, Rabbi, I heard you on the video this morning.
Okay.
Because you do a lot of, you do retreats or seminars, workshops.
Yeah, occasionally I do them, yes.
So we know what we're going to need you to do. That's what you're doing right now, and we really appreciate it. And we do want to give people your website. It's on your blurb and on your bio, Revealing the Soul, and just incredible. Yes. And you really freely give of yourself in that way. What do you see as a male Orthodox rabbi in the year 2010, what some of the female issues are and how we are addressing them? Ah.
Well, the first female issue is men.
Thank you.
The second issue is women. Take men out of the equation and then see what you have.
Say that again.
Take men out of the equation and then see what you have left.
Oh, boy.
The issue is not really a male or feminine issue. We all, as people, we all have masculine and feminine aspects. A man has feminine aspects, a woman has male, we're all different parts. People, sometimes I tell people I'm not male or female, or I'm both, I'm male and female, and they look at me, and I said, well, of course, I had a mother and a father, so I have a bit of both. Now, so it's not really male as a woman or female, a woman or a man. We all have an issue of being ourselves. How best can we put all our feelings or our thoughts or our experiences together to be who we are?
Hmm.
When we become dependent on other people, it's a problem because then we give our power away to other people and we're not ourselves. So for two people to have a real good relationship, each one needs to be themselves. Then they add to the other and they can grow together. So a lot of what people put into terms as problems or issues are not really looking at the problem. Most of us are circumventing it.
So we're just in avoidance? We're just avoiding what the real issue is?
Exactly. The issue is the following. You as a human being are a sensitive being, sentient being. You have feelings that are not, you can't put words to it. Now, as a child has those feelings. But what we do in society is we tell a child, you have to describe everything this way. You have to do things this way. The family has the pressures, the school, society, friends. And as you're growing up, you forget who you are. You don't trust who you are. What we need to do as people is look at each child, and every person is a child. It doesn't matter what age they are. We're still babies and children. You know, I don't know what this adult thing is, but I'm still a child. And my mother's baby. So we need to look at each person, each child, and realize that they are a reflection and an aspect of the Creator in creation. There's a beauty in each person. There's an infinite aspect. That infinite aspect is not tangible. It's not tangible by our senses. It's something innate. It has no description. And when you open your own heart in yourself to yourself to realize there are parts of you that have no description, you can then see it in other people. And then you respect everyone for who they are. It doesn't matter what they do or don't do, because you see their soul, you see their essence. You go beyond all the external. And when people learn to see that in themselves and then see that in other people, that transforms society automatically.
Yanina, do you have a question about, because you're in a religion that some people consider the women to be oppressed. You're a Muslim. What do you think about that perspective, and what would you ask the rabbi?
I think the religion has been perceived as oppressive to women because in some of the countries that the majority of the people are Muslim, there are some abuses going on of women because of cultural and other issues. But that's not to say that abuses of women don't go on in every single country and perpetrated by every single religion in the world, unfortunately. So there's nothing I want to address in terms of that. It's just, you know, popular now to think that Islam is the problem, and of course it's not, because we know that as a religion, Islam does not condone any kind of, you know, violence against women or any of that. So that's all I have to say, and I don't want to give any more credit to that issue.
That's good. That's good. That's great. Well, Jamie, I know you've had friends who were in abusive relationships, right?
Certainly.
And
yeah, you know, it's tricky to navigate. I couldn't agree with the rabbi more, though. You know, it's all inner relationship. Once you see these parts of yourself, and then you can see it in others, it raises it to another vibration. You're no longer criticizing the same surface kind of issues. And I do believe that every external relationship is somehow a reflection of our internal relationship between these God parts and these child parts of ourselves. And that somehow gets reflected outward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I was raised in an environment on the farm where there was, in some ways, in my bloodline, an oppression of women, whether they were consciously aware of it or not. Because we were expected to go to the fields, just like, you know, my brother and my bloodline, my first cousins, and pretty much to pull the same load. Now, there were some heavy things that I couldn't lift 200 pounds, you know. But then we would come back to the house, and time for, if we were able to leave the fields for lunch, the women were expected to cook, clean up, and while the men were resting, and guess what? We all went back to the fields. Then we'd get home in time, you know, to do the chores at the, you know, the barn, take care of all the animals. The women did the cooking, and the women did the cleaning up. Now, it actually made me stronger. Now, as time went by, my dad was a very incredible human in hindsight, because he really measured it out as far as equal. I don't recall him ever cooking when I was growing up, but as he got older, he did cook. But now that right there, I was in a Sikh gurdwara, a temple, Sunday, a very large gurdwara, pretty large, about 300 people. And I don't know who cooked the langar. It was a lot of food there. They always have food. I'm assuming the women did. I have been in homes where with the Sikhs where the men cook. But afterwards, all the serving of the food was done by men, and all the cleaning up was done by the men, and the women were relaxing. And I thought that was very refreshing, because that can be. Sir?
Yeah, that sounds fabulous. I like to get my husband cooking a little and cleaning a little.
Well, I cannot imagine.
I was the same thing at home. I grew up in a home where nothing was a person's responsibility. Whoever was available did it. So I grew up, and what I do cooking, I do cleaning, I do sewing, I do wash. We share. Whoever's available does it. That's how I grew up, and that seems normal to me.
Well, that's the way... And in time, that's the way we did it. By the time I became 12 years old, it became just whoever was there did it. My brother, he was grown, you know, but he now is very thankful. And I will say this, that my husband, he's a better cook than I am. Janina, and if y'all ever come stay with me, I love, Jamie, I love to stay in your home. If you come and stay with me, there's a lot of food. There's always food available. We all cook together. I don't make myself sick trying to make sure everybody's fed all the time. I got over that because in my bloodline, my mother would make herself literally sick because she felt like that generation, that her sense of self-worth came from cooking, and more cooking.
I agree with you, and as you know, my husband also is a better cook than I am. And
yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, and definitely the person who has taught me how to cook myself. So there's no consideration as far as, you know, I have to do this and you have to do that. I always joke with him that he should do the car stuff. Anything that has to do with the car, it's his job. But actually, that's not true, because I love to learn about cars, and I'm always asking him a billion questions about it, because I want to know how to do things on my own as a human being. I think male and female issues sometimes miss the point that we're all human beings, and there's no, I mean, the differences are not important in many, many ways where we make them important.
Well, Rabbi, let me ask you a question. Let's suppose you're a man.
I'm a man?
You're in the hen house now with all these women of all these different religions. Yeah, I love it. And Jamie, by the way, is a Urantia book reader, Rabbi, and has high regard for the Jewish faith. She had a total interfaith wedding. And her mother and father, I love them dearly. And I'll see you in August. I love it, Jamie.
Oh, thank you.
Rabbi, let's suppose that a woman is married. And her husband, she's been married for years, and he just refuses to clean up after himself. I mean, even to the point of taking a shower or a bath and throwing towels, throwing clothes, not cleaning up his food. What would you say to the female? And, of course, I'd love for you to be able to talk to the male in those instances.
I'd tell her to build an outhouse and let him sleep there. To me, a marriage is two people who come together. They respect each other for who they are. They don't want to change each other. They allow each other to be who they are. Although I once heard that, you know, in church, you go down the aisle and then they have the altar. So the reason why a woman goes up the aisle to the altar is because the word aisle, I'll change him.
Ooh.
I'll alter him, sorry, because they sing hymns. So aisle, altar is what she goes up to, and the hymns they sing. So if you think you're going to alter him, that's not why you should get married. Two people that love each other, respect each other, and they're going to grow together. When two people come together like that, that is a marriage. When one person stops respecting the other one, or one person doesn't love the other one, or one person stops growing together, they start growing a different direction, it's not a marriage anymore. And a lot of people don't understand this, and they think they have to put up with things and do things. No. You have to understand what a relationship is. A relationship is when two people come together and grow. When they stop growing together, you have to start questioning what is going on.
Wow. Well, we have another female caller.
Okay.
817, you're on the air. I hope she keeps putting her phone on mute. I'm going to keep her microphone open, and I'll text her. And that's been her several times, and maybe she'll start listening. But I think Jamie had to hang. Oh, there's Jamie. I'll put Jamie back on. Let's see here. Now you really do have all these women. Let's see. I think I got. I love it. Well, we said we're going to. What better way than to talk with a group of women about women issues?
I've got one man. You've got one man around, though, so be careful.
Oh, there's Don. Hello, Don. Oh, this is Jamie's husband.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
Hello, Don. So nice to hear your voice, my brother. Rabbi, they had the interfaith marriage that I was involved with in Los Angeles. And, Don, you just welcome my brother.
Thank you.
Don does a lot of work with energy, vibrasound. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
I understand it.
Go ahead, Rabbi.
I've done many things over the years. I've worked with healing, with vibrational healing. I do long distance healing. I do energy healing as well. I've worked with stones. I've worked with colors. Worked with sound. I've worked on all different things. It's a wonderful thing to learn the vibrations of things. And then once you understand it, you have a different relationship to balance. And it's much easier to work because you've stepped beyond a limited physical space.
Right. I think it's probably the most important thing humans can study right now besides God.
Well, that is part of God.
Yeah.
In fact, let's go to another thing, since you want to talk about men and women. In Hebrew, the word for a man is Ish, and the word for woman is Isha. Both of them have the letters Ish, which means fire. They're both fire. And the letters, the letter of fire that a man has is a Yod, the woman has a He, and that represents God. When you put God, you put the Creator into the fire, then it does exactly what it has to do. And when you take it out, then it remains just a fire.
Wow. Don, you want to share a little bit about your work, about the vibrations and the colors? You can give everybody the website.
Certainly, yeah. The website is harmonicresolution.com.
Harmonicresolution.com.
The work that we do involves synchronizing all of the sensory mechanisms to assist a person to getting into a state of mind called sensory resonance that allows them easier contact with their spirit counterpart. And so we use light and sound and color and vibration. We have a table that turns a person's body fluid into a speaker, so if you lie down on it, it feels like the music or the sound is coming right out of your own body. And it has a visual component that's eyes open with 3D virtual reality, such that we can have a person swimming with dolphins in 3D or flying through pyramids or things like that. But there's also an eyes closed portion at the end that where they close their eyes and the journey goes inward, and we have a little device that turns on the screen that you use when you're dreaming, so kind of creates sort of a lucid dream kind of state of flying over landscapes and other things like that.
And you've done this way before other people did it, Don. You did, started doing it in the 80s, so I know a lot of people have come through.
Actually, I invented the first one in the late 60s.
Oh, my goodness.
And we incorporated and started selling devices in, I believe, 84. But, I got a lot of the, of what that came from was page 500 in the Urantia book, where it talks about the celestial artisans and what they do. And
right.
I got the whole idea of sensory resonance from that, because I believe that's basically what they do, even though they work with a lot more sensory mechanisms than we do, we have right now.
I would agree. I think that I'm proud of you, and that's wonderful work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of medical doctors use in hospitals use his, and I love it. Don, do you have a question of the rabbi?
I was going to say that the rabbi might be interested to know that we have a lot of our process works with a world-class supercomputer and different algorithms. One of which is a 22-step algorithm that is identical to taking a journey through the 10 sephira of the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's 22 pathways between the 10, and
mm-hmm.
this process describes the journey through that such that a person or a substance that goes through that process, winds up more or less like a Zadik.
Mm-hmm.
Or enlightened person.
Yeah, and there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, which are 22 different, conduits of energy flows. Okay.
Right. And those describe a mathematical pathway back to the one.
Mm-hmm.
And we can ask a person to do that by resolving the difference between their actual and potential self. Or we can even
right.
ask substances like water to do it, to go through that process and watch what happens. It cavitates mm-hmm. and implodes and goes inward and purifies
right.
itself and moves to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi, wonderful. What do you think about the Kabbalah? Because I know that's another...
I don't have to think much about it.
I like
grew
the way
up
you
it.
Answered the questions.
I grew up with it, and I studied it. I taught it for 20 years.
Well, that'll work.
I grew up with it, not so much for the philosophy of it or in the way a lot of people study it. I grew up understanding Jewish law according to Kabbalah, why the Torah, the Old Testament says things. And the Kabbalah explains a lot of the spiritual worlds and realms and why and when things are done or how. And how every movement is so exact and precise.
Hmm.
And it was quite amazing studying Jewish law that way.
Wow. Well, Don, it's been interesting for you, quite an interesting adventure for you to be reared as a Christian and to marry a beautiful young lady of the Jewish tradition, although I know Jamie sometimes did not follow Judaism, but I know that y'all do take your daughters, right? They do participate. They go to a school. They still go to those private schools?
Yes, they're still in private schools.
And where have y'all found the balance to rear your daughters as far as the two different religious backgrounds and the two different cultural backgrounds?
I really don't see it at all like two different at all. I see we're raising our kids really to give regard to everybody's approach to the divine, no matter what it is.
And they do that. They do that. But now they're practicing as far as learning prayers. What is the process there?
That's something that we do at home.
Okay.
It's something that we encourage them to keep what I would call an unbroken communion with it. It's not about, you know, when I was young, I used to always be concerned because at the end of the prayer, the Christians will say, Amen. And I always ask my parents, what does that mean? And they would say, rather than telling me the truth, that it was just a way to say, so it shall be. They said it was the way that you basically sign off from God. And I said, well, gosh, if he's there all the time, how can you possibly sign off from it? And so I've kind of learned to live my life trying to be in constant communion with it. You can't really always do that, but as much as I can, I want to do that. And that's what I really want to teach my kids. And I've noticed in my kids that they do that all the time. They talk about God and they talk about talking to God all the time.
Yes,
and it's
they
not
do.
Something that we, it's not it's nothing that we've ever formally done with them. It's just something that we encourage them to do all the time.
But we do try to expose them to both Jewish prayer and Christian
prayer. Yeah, we try to expose them to all the different approaches.
Took them to see Amaji.
Yeah, I took them to see Amaji a while back, and the youngest, well, both of them were all up on the stage looking into the camera. And it's so funny.
Well,
but, yeah.
Well, Rabbi, getting back to our original thoughts on the, as far as what we were going to discuss, the wherefores and the hows, you've done a marvelous, I don't like the word job, but you've accomplished that in a very vivid way. And is there something else? Suzanne, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
There she is. There's another female. You must have had your phone on mute.
Well, I did. There was a lot of noise, people in the hall. They were having kind of a hall meeting here, and I didn't want to come open my mic with all that going on because I'm at work.
Okay, can you speak up just a little, or can you not?
No, right. Since I'm actually at work, I'm enjoying the conversation, and I would love to jump in occasionally, but I can't really speak loud. So,
but do you have a question of the rabbis that he can address while you're listening?
Let's see. You know, he had said something earlier, and I was going to make a comment about. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. And
was it about food, or was it about women's issues?
No,
was it about
no.
connection?
It was about the connection, I guess, living in the moment. And you know, and I really can't remember. That's when the hall conversation was going on. And anyway, I had enjoyed everything that I've heard since I joined at noon. I was a little late getting on.
Well, that's wonderful.
Keep my mic open, and I might be able to jump in here in a minute.
Okay. Janine, are you still with us?
Yes.
Is there any particular subject? And Don, is Jamie still with us?
Yeah, we're still here. Yes, we're still here.
And Rabbi, I'm looking at your website now. What would you consider the subject that most people want you to discuss, Rabbi? What do they feel like they're dealing with the most?
I think the most thing is people want to know why they're confused and don't have real clarity. And that's what we've created, a society where we give our power away, where we've allowed others to make decisions. We've created a society that has taken us away from our pure and innocent being and doesn't allow it, calls pure innocence not normal. And so how do you have clarity when you can't have a pure and simple heart?
Well, what does the average day look like? I know you have children, right?
I have 4 children, yes.
And their ages?
25, 19, 18, and 16.
I remember saying to you that your voice doesn't sound like a gentleman that has a 25-year-old. I remember saying that because there's a vibrancy to your voice.
Well, that's because I'm connected with agelessness.
There you go. We're eternal.
Absolutely. And vibration of voice is very important. Most people don't understand that you create with your vibration of the voice. They don't understand the gutturals and how it reflects parts of the brain and a lot of variances. And so people spend a lot of time talking and use their ability to talk about nothing. And by doing so, they destroy a lot of their power of creation. And they don't understand what they're doing. It's very important to actually be silent and only speak when necessary and appropriately, because then you become more in tune with the frequency and vibration of your own voice and what flows through you.
Would you tell us what your average day is like? Just an average day.
An average day. I don't know if I have an average day.
Okay. Well, you have clarity, so could you?
Okay, this morning I had a class with a scientist, and she wanted me to describe creation in Genesis. And the way Genesis, Old Testament, is translated is actually not in accordance with the vibrational energy of the letters and words. It was done by religion, both a Jewish and Christian, in a way that's very distant from what the words actually mean and say. And so that's why people don't connect with the feeling and connection in it. And so I started explaining what the frequencies of the letters are and what they represent. And that's what I was doing this morning. And the other day, Sunday night, I actually gave a workshop, a lecture, whatever, a group of people. And there I spoke about the oneness of creation and the knowledge of oneness in ancient times and how Abraham was just a continuation of it from Melchizedek, from Shem, Noah. And the story of the sacrifice of Abraham, which is also not translated in accordance with the words either. Everyone translates it as a sacrifice, and he was going to sacrifice his son, and God said, don't do it, which is a lesson that God does not want people sacrificed. You don't want your child to be killed. But the whole translation actually never made sense to me. So I explained what the words are. It doesn't say the word sacrifice. It says the word elevation. And I explained going through each word, showing the root of each word, the grammatical roots, and how the whole thing is about a spiritual journey, about Abraham going on the spiritual journey, leaving his physical body with the lads that were with him, and taking himself and Isaac, the fire and water elements, to bring them together, that they're not contrary, to unite them. Now, he went with Isaac to that space where the water and fire became one, which is the same word in Hebrew for heaven, shamayim, which it translates heaven, is fire and water in total balance. And that is what Abraham achieved, this oneness of balance of creator life force. He was able to experience it and therefore bring it into the world. He brought this element of oneness into the creation, and that's what made it so special. So that's part of my thing, analyzing and explaining things to help people understand it in its soul depths and connect with the Creator from within.
What do you think? I've read about people that say the Bible, the Old Testament in particular, and all the writings were written with a code, of numbers.
The code of numbers is very interesting, but it's a lower vibration and frequency than the oneness of the creation. Okay. There is a synonymity, there is a oneness in numbers, but they're numbers. The oneness of the source doesn't have numbers because it is simple without any definition. It's simple without any defining anything. It's beyond numbers. And so it is an element in creation, definitely, but it's not the highest vibrational frequency if you want to really connect. I'd say it's one of the steps in the ladder, if you wish.
Well, so the typical day you started out teaching, sharing, and I know from what I've read you're constantly studying. In your prayer life, do you still do function as a rabbi at times in a synagogue?
I try not to.
Try not to. Okay.
Yeah. I stay away from it as much as possible. I stay away from religion and politics as much as I can.
Well, I hear you on that. I will not discuss politics because that will get
you
in trouble.
Religion has a lot of issues where it separates people from people and people from the Creator, and I'm not interested in that. Judaism is, for me, a base to expand from and become part of everything and everyone. And that's how I always understood it. And so what I do is I study the Old Testament and I try and analyze and understand how to connect within myself with the Creator. And what I'm doing now, I started writing a translation of Genesis chapter 1, what the words mean, with a commentary and explanation, and it's a translation that's never been done before, and it would change the whole face of everything if people understood it.
Now, what is the name of the book, Rabbi?
I haven't printed it. I still need a publisher.
Oh, you haven't, but you haven't come up with a name yet for the
No,
book?
I've written it. I'm editing it now, and
it'll just be a translation of the Bible, or are you going to call it a... So that'd be interesting.
I don't know what I'll call it yet. But I'll give you an example. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth, actually, and grammatically should translate, with wisdom is brought forth a power of boundaries, with the balance of opposite movements, and with a desire to do the Creator's will.
Mm. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I just got a whole new meaning out of that.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry?
Yeah, if they would have translated that way properly in the first place, they wouldn't have had a lot of the issues they have now.
Boy, isn't that the truth. Well, you know, one of the big things in Christianity, have you ever read the New Testament at all?
I have looked through it.
Well, it's, you know, very little of it are Jesus' words, as you know. We only have about 30 days of his life in the Bible. And according to the Urantia book, it brought back his full life and teachings and really embellishes his life as a Jewish rabbi.
Absolutely.
Quite lovely. And one of the big issues in Christianity is what is called the atonement doctrine, that if you do not believe that Jesus died for your sins, that you're going to this burning hell. Mm. Where do you think the Apostle Paul, because he is the one that grabbed hold, he's the one that brought that forth. It was not Jesus. I do understand. Well, let me just ask you, why do you think that became such an issue?
It makes absolutely no sense to me. From Jesus himself, living as a Jew, we know that each person is responsible for themselves. The idea of someone dying for someone else's sins is just preposterous. Everyone is responsible for their own connection with God. And so the reason Paul did it, the reason this thing came up, is because in wanting to create a different religion, they had to create separation from what Judaism believes. And a lot of things they created to separate other people from Judaism, to create a new religion. And I think this somehow was part of it. I don't know where the idea came from, but it's very strange to me.
Well, I know part of it came from the influence of Mithraism, you know, the Mithra, and also in the Old Testament, it goes, like, go back to Abraham, you know, in the Bible, according to the Bible, God told Abraham to kill his son. And some
that is actually a lie. In the Hebrew, it says, V'haleho v'ola, elevate him. It does not say kill him or sacrifice him.
Wow.
I need you to just travel around
to Christian churches, Rabbi.
I'd love to.
They need to hear that. They need to hear it from a rabbi.
Okay. Well, you organize it. And I'll just share one more thing, for the fun of it. You heard of this Adam and Eve and snake thing in the tree?
Right.
Well, let me tell you something. The word in Hebrew for snake is nachash. They translate it as snake. The word is called that. The word chash means to feel. Nachash means a whisper. So what actually it says is nachash, that it says that Adam and Eve heard a whisper. But instead of saying it's a whisper, they translate it as snake.
Wow. And that so makes sense, because they did hear a whisper. That's true.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
So there's word after word, I can show you how it's mistranslated. And it's just amazing. It's a whole different story.
Now, in the Old Testament, there was sacrifice of humans, according to what we've read, and then the animals. Do you think perhaps that's where that atonement came from?
Okay, firstly, in the Old Testament, there's no sacrifice of human beings, nowhere.
Now, okay, so when it talks, it doesn't mention anywhere like the firstborn? That's not what that means?
No, the firstborn are not sacrificed. The firstborn, it says, are dedicated as priests to serve God. They're not sacrificed.
Wow. Yeah, we're going to get you a tour. And I know some of these televangelists that I need to get you on the phone with, Pastor. Listen, I keep calling you Pastor because you really do. You really do carry the essence of a pastor's heart for all the people that are willing to listen and open up their hearts, Rabbi.
Right.
And what you just told me, do you know how that would modify modern Christianity? Do you realize just what you just said in the last 5 minutes? It would, and I hear this from my preacher friends, but I'm talking about the loudest voices on the television that have the mega churches. Why do you think they persist in these fear tactics of proselytizing and telling people they're no good, they're sinners, they're, and we haven't addressed this. What about hell?
Hell is in people's minds. Heaven and hell is where you live. You don't have to go there. A lot of people live in hell. I don't know why they're waiting to die. Heaven and hell is, again, something that religion has built up into something. It's an imagination. No one can prove it, disprove it. It's a way of controlling people, a way of creating something in people's minds. If you're happy, you're in heaven. If you're not happy, you're in hell. It has nothing to do with after death. It's where you are now.
Well, you know, in the New Testament, Jesus didn't talk about hell. He only mentioned it was a parable. And I'm amazed that people would take all his great parables and understand, like he talked about grapes and vines and trees and lambs being lost, and I'll leave the fold of 99 to find one. But then he has this one parable about the great divide of this man that went, and people take it literally. In the New Testament, in the it is mentioned in the right before Revelation. I need to find my Bible here. Jude, yes, that those who lost their first estate, that being the supernatural beings, the angelic orders, those who went into a form of what is termed rebellious thought patterns of not being here to be of service, they're in an isolated sphere to be forgiven, to work things out, to reconcile. Well, okay, that makes, okay, if someone is out of line, like we have prisons today, if someone is out murdering people, do you like our prison system, by the way? the return rate is quite remarkable.
Yep.
But that's a whole nother conversation. I've gone into the federal prisons where it's all men, taught life skills, I've ministered, I've always had great respect paid toward me. But I will tell you, the way the prison system is set up is, and everybody knows it's not working.
Right.
Well, you have answered a lot of questions about the Holy Scriptures. And you've brought back what you've done in this time with us, Pastor. There I go again. You're just going to be a pastor to me.
Okay.
You've brought back the essence of the religion of Jesus. That's what you're here. You walk in a place of truth, beauty, and goodness. You walk in a place of bringing forth the real good news, the gospel that Jesus proclaimed. Love God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and treat your neighbor as yourself. And Rabbi, I will speak this to you. Your voice will be heard more and more and more. And people will know you. You'll become a household name. Because people need this clarity. People need this connection. And I am eternally grateful for you taking time to be on this broadcast with us today.
And my pleasure.
And we are coming down to the wire. The time has gone by very quickly. We've covered a lot of territory. And we emphasized a lot about food. But that really has value in life. It's very difficult to find fresh food. We buy from a farmer's market. One of our daughter has her own two gardens, and others. Our soil does not give to being having a garden, but we're working on other ways to do that. And how would you recommend, as we're closing out, to buy their food? Where do you buy the food that's the most alive?
Well, what I would recommend really is everyone going back to having their own cow, their own raw milk, their own chicken and eggs, their own area of grass feed, going and fruit trees, and as much as possible going back to what is naturally God-given to us.
And it's very therapeutic to have...
Absolutely.
To be around the animals and the garden. It's very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
People think, well, it's hard labor, and I'm going to speak to that. You know, we
mm-hmm.
have these issues of people coming in to and taking over jobs, but when I was raised up, we just did everything. You know, we did, there was no such thing as sitting back and saying, okay, I'm going to tell you what to do physically. You know, you go work hard labor.
Mm-hmm.
And that serves us well. We've ended up with a generation of people that have physically become lazy. You know, we have a real problem with that in this nation.
Mm-hmm.
And the media hasn't helped, has it, Rabbi?
No, the media is part of the problem.
Those sound bites that we get on the news and the TV shows that... I have a feeling you don't watch a lot of television, Pastor, Rabbi.
I don't have time.
I don't either. I know I'm going to call you... RB, Rabbi Pastor, that's your new coin name with me. You're RB now.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Jamie, Don, do you have anything else you'd like to say? We're down to 5 minutes.
All I could think, I was out for a few minutes. I don't know where the conversation went, but I know that the rabbi would, from what I heard earlier, would love to know that we now have the technology to take a person's voice and bring it all the way down to the difference between who they say they are and who they really are, and then present that back to them, one in one ear and the other in the other ear, and ask the brain to resolve the difference between those two aspects of oneself. And so that's sort of the essence of our technology.
If you're
right
able
now.
To send me information on it, I'd love it.
Did
Fantastic.
You hear that, Don? Yes. And I
yes.
do feel a trip coming on. I'm sure you go to L.A. at times, right, Rabbi?
I haven't been there for a while.
Mm. Well, Jamie, are you still there?
I'm still here, yes. Please come visit us.
I feel,
okay.
an, invitation, I feel an invitation coming on.
Okay.
And I'm going Open out invitation. There on the 17th, so we need to work out you know, something there.
Okay.
That'd be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And come and I'll feed you, and I'll clean up after you.
I don't leave a mess, so you're going to have to clean up.
Well,
well
have
I'm
a...
just profoundly moved what I heard you say today, and it was just an honor to take part in listening to you this morning. It was really, really mm-hmm. wonderful, refreshing, and
Thank
beautiful.
You. Thank
well,
you.
We're going to close out the show and thank you so much for being on the air with us, and I'm going to tell our listening audience to please be sure to tune in Saturday. Dave Tucker and I are co-hosting, and I put a blurb up there that talks about what I'm calling the mystery guest. We're going to talk about a lot of things, and it'll continue in this vein, but it'll be directed toward the teachings of the Urantia book. And then join me again next Wednesday. We're going to be doing an overview about the Urantia book from one of the greatest minds that I believe that understand the woof and wharf of the Urantia book. And, of course, Don, I'm talking to you. You also could – we need to get you on the air. Jamie's been on with me in December. But this is James Woodward. James has an incredible knowledge. He was at the foundation – for years taking calls, and he really has a grasp of the big scope. And Suzanne, I guess you're still on the air with us.
Yes, I am. I am. Mm-hmm.
And would you like to say anything as we close out?
Well, I did remember the one thing that I wanted to say. I know when the rabbi said something about a unique aspect, I have always said we are an unique immortal aspect of a divine and infinite concept. And I totally agree that everything we do, we think, we say, creates energy, and you manifest and you create, and that actual creation is the image in which we are cast. People miss that so much, but it was great listening to you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I've been out to your website, and I am just enlightened by the information that you presented us today. Thank you again so much, and hopefully you can spread this enlightenment farther. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we will end the broadcast with our good friend Robin, a dear friend of mine, who sings Alleluia, and she does a different, slightly different variation, One Voice, One Heart. Thank you, Rabbi Yossi, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Yossi?
Well, yeah, it's fine. I know who you're talking to.
And when you come to my house, you can do all the cleaning, all the cooking, milk the cow. That's fine with me.
Okay.
God bless everybody. Bye for now. Well, I was going to play that song, but my switchboard just blanked out, so we'll just end the broadcast. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.